What's up, everybody? Chef Marcus Sampson here, and thanks for tuning in to This Moment, the transatlantic bridge that connects Harlem, Sweden, to the rest of the world. This week, my co-host and I, Timbuktu, will be airing a live recording that we recently did in my hometown, Gothenburg. Shout out for Nefertita, the club that was hosting us. It's a great fun, man. It was so special for me to be home in Gibor. You're going to learn a little bit more about me as a teenager, Jason, and of course, the craft that evolves our Swedish creative experience. This moment live from Gothenburg.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Good morning. All right. So we're going to switch over to English because it's really a special, you know, it's always special to be at Nefertiti. And this is not, it's definitely not Marcus's first time, which you'll hear about. And it's not my first time either. But it's the first time actually that Marcus and I are doing our podcast This Moment live. It's not being broadcast live, but we're doing it in front of all of y'all, in front of a live audience. And since we want to, you know, we call our podcast This Moment because it started in the pandemic. And it started because I was in Harlem, in Marcus's neighborhood, working and had to go home because of the pandemic. And we were talking on the phone so much and kind of... what would you call it, Marcus? I mean, we were ventilating and just talking about like what's going on in New York, what's going on in Stockholm. So we call our podcast a transatlantic bridge. So, you know, even though we both speak Swedish, you all speak Swedish, that would be the natural language for us to communicate in. We want this to reach, you know, our listeners who are in London, Nairobi, New York, LA, Paraguay, you know, wherever, you know.
Yes, yes, yes. First of all, a huge thanks to Nefertiti for making this happen,
yeah.
Right? Big up for Nefertiti.
Tack, Nef.
To run a culture mecca next year.
Yeah.
Nefertiti is turning 50, yeah. Right? That's pretty amazing. So huge thanks to Nefertiti. Also, huge thanks to Aaron for making this possible.
Yeah.
Without Aaron's support, this wouldn't be possible. And this transatlantic bridge has been a connective bridge and really something that both Jason and I needed. I think everyone here in this room, we share the scares, the fear we had when the pandemic started. Everyone was scared. Everyone's reality was really flipped upside down. And we all have these emotions and what's going to happen? What's going to happen to me? What's going to happen to my family? What's going to happen to my extended family? And as Jason and I are two creatives with a love for Sweden, we both have enormous love for America as well. But also, as two creatives, what's going to happen to us? What's going to happen in terms of our craft? Will we ever go back? What's going to happen to our young kids? So we just started to talk about it. And I think that if everyone kind of puts their mind back to a year and a half ago, around March
2020.
Yeah, March 2020, Jason came to New York, did an amazing concert at Ginny's. And a week later, he was going to Chicago, right? And we were talking back and forth, and I said, Jason, try to get home to your family because they're about to shut down the border. And that was a scary moment.
We had heard about, you know, I don't know if you guys recall February 2020, we heard about this virus that was spreading, this infection that was spreading in China. And we heard about Wuhan. And I think, you know, at least for me, I don't know about all of y'all, I was like, oh, damn, that must be really tough for them over in Wuhan. Mm-hmm. You know, kind of like too bad for them. It's really awful, you know. Yeah, and let me go about the rest of my day.
Yeah.
And that kind of attitude persisted, you know, going into March. I remember beginning of March when the first cases in the United States came. It was in Washington State. And everybody kept up this kind of optimistic, you know, hope that it's not gonna be that bad. It's gonna blow over. It's not, you know, it's not gonna touch us. It's not gonna interfere with our lives and our plans and our, you know, our dreams and what we want and our schedules. And Marcus was actually, when I called him, I think it was on the 12th of March, I was in Chicago. And I had all these plans for what I was going to do. I was going to, I had an opening for my stage performance of A Drop of Midnight on March 30th. You know, all these big plans that I'd worked so hard for. And Marcus said, Jason, you sound very soft about it now. When I called you, you were like, cancel everything.
Yeah.
Cancel everything. You need to go home. Be with your family. I'm like, what are you talking about? I've been working my ass off for a year to make this happen. I can't. You're like, cancel everything. Yeah. And 2 days later, I got on a plane and I went back.
Yeah. That's
the roots of why we needed to talk. And then for the month of April 2020, 25% of the people infected with COVID-19 were in New York State. Mm-hmm. So it was like the epicenter of the pandemic for a good 2 months. So I was calling Marcus every day, like, how are you doing? Is everybody alive? Is everybody healthy? And everybody wasn't. You would tell me about this person passed away, that person passed away.
Sure. No, a chef friend of mine passed away really early, and that's when he hit home for me, when a friend of mine, Floyd Cardos, rest in peace, he passed in early March, and that hit home for the food community really, really hard in America. But then it's a lot of anonymous, just great, hardworking people that, especially in a place like Harlem, they got impacted. But
but also, just to let you guys know, so Marcus Samuelson is a chef, but he's also so much more than just a chef. You know, I would say a thinker, an activist, you're a restaurateur, you're a TV personality. Marcus, I know a lot of people that work a lot, but you're definitely the person I know that works the most.
And I feel like when Jason always says slightly older than you.
Yeah. He's also a little older than I am. But but so when I get to be Marcus's age, I want to be like
exactly.
You know. But so then I really have to hustle. But I wanted to say that when the pandemic started, I thought, well, wow, now Marcus can't, you know, work. Now he's got to take some, you know, time off like everyone else. And then after a few days, when the pandemic started, I remember you said you were really, it hit you really hard. Wow. I remember you said something like, what did you say? 10-2 or something. Yeah. It took me 10 years to build this, and it took 2 weeks to lose it all.
It took 25 years to build up and 10 days to break down.
Yeah, 25-10. Yep. But then I added a number to that.
Yeah.
I think it was 2. It'll take you 2 years to build it back up. But what you did was, instead of sitting on your hands and sitting at home being depressed about it, you flipped your restaurant, Red Rooster, into a...
like a soup kitchen, community kitchen.
A soup kitchen.
Yeah.
And how many meals did you
give
out to the
community?
Well, it
wasn't me, it was the whole team, the community. We served about 250,000, so basically the population of Malmo, basically, like 250,000 collectively over a year. We didn't do it alone. We did it with World Central Kitchen. And I didn't know how to do it, but I had a friend that had an organization, Jose Andres. And I would say, I want to go back, actually. I want to bring it back to Gothenburg. One of the, if everyone thinks about the, whatever fears they had, or anger, or bitterness, or whatever emotions you went through, I went through all of those too. And one of the things that I had the most scare about was that food really saved me. Food, like, I worked with cooking since I was 17, 18 years old. It gives me my identity, all the rooms, all the places. You're really talking to an advanced dishwasher and a rapper, right? So think about that, right? And we've been collectively all over the world. But what you get through working is not just the work. You also get a certain level of discipline, which I know I really needed, right? You get a certain sense of la familia that you can talk to and share experiences. And you get this community, both from back of the house, your service staff, but also the guest. And I actually didn't know myself as an adult without food, without that pattern of getting up, going to work, coming back. And I was super scared of losing that. And my friend Jose said, well, we know how to serve social distance, safe. We have gloves. We have masks. And that's really what got us going. I also want to talk a little about the place we are, Gothenburg.
Exactly.
My so deep, deep love and for the city that I grew up in and that I always bring with me wherever I go. If I'm in the States, people say like, oh, you're from Switzerland. We like, love it. No, I'm from Sweden. Oh, the cheese there is great. No, I'm from Sweden.
And for any Swede,
yeah,
will know instantly when Marcus yeah opens his mouth where he's from. Like, there's no doubt yeah about it.
And then
if you just say something in Swedish, like, you know.
Well, we have in Gothenburg, we have a lot of international word. Like, la is French. It's LA. Right? It's very, very sophisticated. So if I mean,
ja, men det är liksom ingen tvekan om var man kan komma från när du snackar svenska.
Give it again, det är självklart, absolut, yeah, always.
And
we'll never
actually
change.
It was about 10 years ago that you and I hung out in Gothenburg together.
Yeah.
But I've noticed now that we're here, your like Gothenburg accent is even thicker.
There's two things you can't do as a Swede. You can't come back as Dolph Lundgren. You can't do that. And you also cannot come to Gothenburg with a Stockholm accent.
Oh, no.
Like, you can't. Those are the two things you gotta like, kind of like.
Now I come from an even smaller town down south. You know, I'm from Lund and Malmö, and I remember when I moved up to Stockholm 2000, and I released my first song in Swedish called MVH, and I came back down to Malmö. People were like, "Yo, man, what the fuck? Why the fuck did you move? You moved to Stockholm and you started rap på stockholmska. Vad fan är det där?" And you know, I mean, I think to most people in Stockholm, I definitely don't speak their dialect.
No, you don't.
What?
No, you don't.
You know.
But the other thing that always comes up is, besides the Switzerland conversation, then the next section, Stockholm, Copenhagen, Stockholm. I think, no, I'm from Gothenburg. And maybe someone in the crowd knows that something about Gothenburg, whether it's Volvo, if they know music, maybe they know Little Dragon, whatever it could be, right? It's connected. But then, which is always the thing that hangs in the air. Oh, there's black people in Sweden? Right?
Of course.
And I don't even take it... for me, I think it's a great question, right? Mm. It's all about identity and explaining that. And yes, there's more than me. and so that also is a conversation starter. And one of the things with this moment that we wanted to do, besides just communicating to each other, we wanted to create a space for black conversations from a BIPOC, but from a Scandinavian, but from a diaspora of Africa, and a conversation in a room that you just don't have to be one thing, right? If you're black and queer, what is that conversation like? If you are black and an engineer, what does that look like? If your ambition is to be an astronaut, if your ambition is to be a rapper. So our conversation is to show that, hey, the room is big. Everyone has dreams, regardless of your ethnicity, whether you speak Swedish or not. Mm. Everyone has dreams, and we all need help as humans to navigate through that. Like Jason and I have been extremely fortunate to be able to work with our dreams, and we couldn't do it without you guys that support us. But every single person in here, regardless of age, whether you're in the mid-career, beginning of your career, you dream about something. You know, in my case, I always make life hard. My dream is to buy guys. It's a hard decision. It's a very, very tough decision. But we all...
Is that... You've never said that to me before. Jag älskar att det är guys också.
Oh, it's hard.
But Marcus has been breaking... Now that we're in Gothenburg, you know, we met yesterday. I came down and... Now I'm really getting some GBG facts from Marcus, like this and that. And so it was yesterday that I found out, like, no, forget about EFK, forget about Greta. It's guys, det är det som gäller. And you also were like, and that's the team that everybody loves. Nobody can say anything about them, really, you know. I don't know. It could be a hard sell in this room, you know. I don't know, but I'm not from here, so I can
say it. I would say it like this. Guys is like Hammarby, right? IFK people like because they're the most famous. Yeah. Nobody really likes the IFK. They don't. Örgryte doesn't even like. No one cares the Örgryte. It doesn't happen.
Woo!
So then you have guys left, which is like this hate love relationship. We always struggle. We always pour, and then we win two games in a row. We get so excited, then we lose seven again. Story of my life.
I definitely think. I hope you that dream comes true. But
sure.
So. Okay, Marcus, I want to rewind it a bit.
Yes.
And this is mostly because we're here in your hometown.
Yes.
You know, Somani City, 1990, you know, 1990.
Yes.
You were about 18 years old in Gothenburg.
Yeah.
What was, because I know, for example, Nefertiti has been a big part of your life
Absolutely.
When you were young. Take us back to 1990. 18-year-old Marcus, what was life like in Gothenburg back then?
First of all, this area where we are, like Grönsakstorget, it's a very, very important part of the city because it's connective. You have the university part is right here, or just go across the bridge. Very blue collar. You go out to I used to go to school, Kockskolan, right there across the street, på Jantorget. It's like okay, right
but
there.
Wait. How many weeks did you go to Kockskolan?
Not that long, but no. We can talk about that.
Yeah.
But the other part about this, there was really, in two other worlds, that was really important. My sister.
Three weeks.
My sister Linda worked.
I had to put that
out. Yeah. My sister Linda worked at Noblesse Hair Salon, which is across the street, which opened the door to like so many different things that I just didn't know about, right? And my father's office was just up the street. And it just happened to be that where my dad's office was, in the basement of the same building, out of all the damn buildings in the city, there was an illegal club called Funkhouse, where me and my friends on the worst night could rent it out from the Nigerians and run our illegal club in the illegal club, which you will appreciate this. One of the nights, the person that opened for us was Leila Kay.
Wow.
So we hustled. Woo! And we got it done.
Give it up, GBG. And this is Swedish rap history.
It is. Not just,
No, I mean, but she's one of the Swedish rap pioneers.
Yes, Lila absolutely.
K. And then the first Swedish rapper to make it abroad.
Absolutely.
I remember when she played at the Apollo. I mean, I saw it on TV. I wasn't there. That was a huge deal.
Yeah, and that all happened in this part of town. And the thing was that the little event money we got from that event actually helped me. So we were three friends that were hustling. My friend Thomas, that I wish he could come here, but he's working tonight, and another kid. And I took my money and saved them for my cooking trips, right? Thomas was like...
But what were your cooking trips? What do you mean?
I wanted to go abroad. I knew that my ambition of cooking and my narrative of what I wanted to do could not be met in Gothenburg. And one of the blessings about being black is that it gives you clarity. You figure out quickly, like, okay, it's not everyone else's fault, but I don't belong in this picture. You've either been told by it, by the people you work with, or you just feel odd man out. So rather than walk around and don't try to figure that out, I felt like it's better if I leave. And also educational-wise, it could be better for me to leave. And everyone's like, well, you're going to go to Stockholm? I was like, why would I go to Stockholm? Why couldn't I just go to the world? You know, and I met this guy at Park Avenue where I worked, which was like the grandest hotel. It was a big deal for me to get a job at Belle Avenue, which was like this fancy.
Which is today, or the club that I know of as Park Lane, or it's by that hotel all the way up by Götaplatsen.
Yeah,
right?
Which is like an iconic hotel in Gothenburg history, right? Yeah. Because it's not what it looked like today. it is, they had three venues. They had Harlequin, which was like fast and, you know, like if Mick
was
Jack,
it a restaurant?
Yeah,
or,
but like if the big star came to Gothenburg, they stayed at
Harlequin. It's such an 80s name.
And it was it was the vibe there that was crazy. And then Belle Avenue was this fine dining restaurant where I worked, and Park Lane was the club.
Okay, so you were at the fine dining place.
Yeah.
What kind of stuff were you cooking? What was fine dining like then, 89, 90?
Swedish ingredients with French food. And right there, I knew somebody lied, right?
Mm-hmm.
Food is, right? I'm like, whoa. I love food. My grandmother cooked. I love her food. But why should everything be French? And I just felt like, why? There's more foods in the world.
So steak tartare or beef tartare?
It was just French, like beautiful, like
hollandaise sauces.
Heavy, exactly. Like heavy food. Not my kind of food, but I love the techniques, right? Mm. And actually, a guy that said to him, Marcus, you're way too ambitious. You need to get the hell out, and I'm going to help you. And he did. I worked there for 18 months, and he got me from Park Avenue to Switzerland.
Wow.
And I was so cocky.
What year was that?
That was 90. You asked me about summer of 90.
Okay. Yeah.
And I remember it so well because I was like really excited about it. I got out. I got to Switzerland. I was ready to go to the kitchen. And there's like, what do you mean I'm not going to start in the kitchen? So I started in the garden.
Oh, wow. So yeah. You're not even in the building.
No. And I was like, I'm so glad no one's going to take pictures because I came here, told everybody that I would go and work in a kitchen. Mm-hmm. And here I'm like, just like, you know, pulling carrots and stuff like that. But it was a good education for me. And eventually,
cutting herbs,
just learning.
Did you even have a chef clothes on?
Switzerland.
Or did you, were you in like a like a gardening overall?
No, they had Switzerland was very... Because
I imagine, at least let me have the uniform.
I had the uniform. Switzerland was very different than Sweden. Switzerland, they spoke either French in the morning or German.
And this is important for our American listeners.
Yeah.
Switzerland is very different from Sweden.
Yes.
You know?
You know? They spoke French in the morning or German. You have to polish your shoes. You have to make a tie, which I didn't know how to do, so I slept in mine. Not a good look. And then you have to iron your clothes.
You're just in the garden. It's cool.
Yeah, I'm just in the garden.
It's like, it's okay. It's okay.
And, but I also told the chef pretty early, you have to understand. So I always had this like kind of fear of my mother. So I said to her, the chef, to listen to me at the third day, like, you cannot fire me. He's like, I'm the chef. I can fire whoever I want. I was like, you don't understand. I got this opportunity. I can never go back to my mom and said that I got fired. So it's like, that's not my problem. I was like, promise me, no matter what happens, don't fire me. He's like, can you please leave? Just get the hell out.
But you know, let's talk for a second about Anne-Marie Samuelsson, your mom.
Yes.
You know, last time we met in Gothenburg,
yes,
it was the opening of the Post Hotel down by Posthusplatsen. And I had to, you know, I was invited, you know, Marcus, you invited me to come and perform. And I remember Anne-Marie, she must have been in her 80s.
Yeah, she was.
And we performed really late. It got postponed.
Yeah.
But she was there with her walker, one hand on the walker, one hand in the air,
yeah.
1 a.m., like dancing to the music.
Yeah.
But she's really been one of your main teachers in life, you know, other than being just your mom.
Yeah, my mom was a major force in my whole guidance of who I am. In a way that, you know, what I think is so beautiful about love, it doesn't have any color. It's we'd be an example of that would be my mother, right? She came from Helsingborg, so always had the accent. She adopted three black kids, right? And we were always the odd kids. Look, you know, we just looked very, very different, right? But she gave us a lot of confidence. Her relationship with our culture and trying to understand black culture, bless her soul, was always, and she did it her way, right? Like, she asked me in school, like, is your English teacher Swedish? I said, yeah. Uh-oh, that's not good. I don't trust that. You need to learn English from like Bob Marley, or you need to learn English from like Marvin Gaye or something like that. So her way of teaching our black culture was her way, the only way we knew. I remember actually coming into the city like this with her being really, really young, and anytime, and this is like you know, like in the 70s, in the 80s, like anytime she saw a black person, get out of the car, kids, get out of the car, stop the car. And she ran us over to meet, like, you know, some Johnny from Gambia
random,
or something like that.
Guy, yeah.
And she walked over and said, I got black kids. And he's like, I can see. And like, and he's like, and we were like very uncomfortable. And she's like, say hi to them. And he's like, hi. That was it.
Yeah.
And fast forward, because you and I met in the 90s, 20 years later.
We met 1995. Yeah.
Very, very similar in the Swedish church.
On Fifth Avenue and 48th Street.
Yes. There was every Swede that has been to New York City knows about you. Go to the Swedish
Svenska
church.
Svenska Sjömanskyrkan. You can go and you can read a Swedish newspaper and buy a sexchoklad, and you know, and for Swedes who are abroad, they get very kind of like home, you know, longing for home, and then you know. So my dad would want to go there to read the Swedish newspapers, and I would come with him sometimes.
And I was there looking for a roommate, as you know, the hustle in New York. You get to New York, you get in, but then you need.
You
a
had
roommate.
Just arrived to New York.
Just arrived, fresh off
as
the boat.
As an intern at Aquavit.
Yes.
Just arrived, fresh off the boat, 1995, and my dad said, and it was only us. Marcus was sitting over there. My dad is sitting where you're sitting, reading his newspaper. I'm sitting, like, not doing anything. He's like, Jason, you should go over and talk to that young man. He looks very nice. He could be your friend. I'm like, come on, Dad. I don't know him. I can't just go up and talk to a random stranger. He's like, what do you mean? Of course you can. Just go up and talk to him. Get his number. You could be friends. I'm like, no, get out of here, Dad. And he puts his newspaper down, very dramatically folds it up, goes over, and I'm like, oh, God, this is so embarrassing, you know. And 5 minutes later, he comes back waving a little piece of paper, and he's like, now I got his number. Now he's my friend, you know. And that's how we met.
Yes. Yeah. And so I think nothing had changed from like 1979 to 2000.
Shout out to our parents.
Absolutely.
You know?
We wouldn't be here with our grandparents and our parents. And I'm forever grateful for how I was raised and how I learned to navigate and hustle, truly hustle, you know.
So take us back to, what is your earliest memory from this room that we're in right now? Nefertiti, which is the most, one of the oldest jazz clubs in Sweden that's still operational, you know, turning 50 next year. Mm-hmm. And it's still around thanks to the incredible team that works here. Pushed through the pandemic with all the challenges that brought about, you know. Tell me about some early memories from this room.
This was the place, because there's a lot of after-hours illegal clubs in this area, and I hope they're still going on because it's so good when you can do something late that is you're not supposed to.
Are there, the audience, are there still Svartklub around this area?
Yeah, not really.
Not really.
Nice. I love it. I just love that. I'm sure there are, but
yeah,
but
you
anyway.
Just yeah. You just you don't know.
So
about it.
there was Draupner was a club that was just across the street, and there was one specific different audience. Then you had Funkhouse up the street this way, and then it was a bunch of places. But Nefertiti was kind of always the culture center. It was like could be jazz, it could be some like a big artist from Stockholm when they came down. They would maybe do an after gig here, for example. So it was always a little bit of a higher level of art versus just having
did
a DJ.
Did Prince ever play in Gothenburg? He must
did.
Have.
Did
you go? Don't okay. Like. Okay, sorry.
Are you really going to do this to me?
What?
Okay, I can tell you the whole embarrassing Prince story. Do you want to hear the embarrassing Prince story?
Yes.
Two Prince stories. One was successful and one was not so successful. I'm going to give you the best one. I'm in. Prince comes to Gothenburg, Sign of the Time tours. I work
1988.
I work over
it at must have been or 89.
Something like that. I work over at the Park Avenue and they say Prince gonna come. And I was like, oh my freaking God, this is amazing. This is like I don't even know how to compare this. So I'm like, I know he's gonna have an after party, and he had the after party at Park Avenue, right? So here's the whole thing. I get two tickets. To go and see, I had to hustle and work.
At Scandinavium.
The concert is amazing. He has this weird stage, which looks like kind of like in the middle of Times Square, but it's in Gothenburg, and I'm seeing Prince. It's unbelievable. And I go with my girlfriend at the time, Karina, an amazing girl. much higher quality than I was like 18. I have no idea how to deal with her. And I'm like so excited. I'm at the Prince concert with my girl. This is everything. All of a sudden, these end of the concert, these two guards comes up to us. And I was like, oh, cool. They're going to come up and talk to us. That's so cool. I'm going to be in a Prince video. He just walks up to me and says, hey, guys, do you want to go to the after party? And I was like, sure. He looks at me, not you. She can go. And I was like, well, we're not going. If I can't go, if we're not going together.
Oh, okay. You just stepped in like that. Was
and
like
he did, and okay. Then I hear from the back, I want to go. And then this gets worse. This is like mid-story. Okay. What do you mean you're going? I got you the ticket. What the hell is going on? And like, I'm going. And back then, it
was so Karina went.
Back then, there's no cell phones, right? So I go out to the public. We go out to the public phone. Karina goes first, calls her friend, say, come, we're going to go to a Prince after party. She's like, are you kidding me? I'm going. So her girlfriend comes in. I call my mom. It's like, mom, come and pick me up. Oh. And my mom is like, what do you mean you were at the Prince concert with Karina? And this is like 1 o'clock in the morning. She like she drives to the city, and
okay,
she's
so
like,
mom does come and pick
you
up.
She has to come and pick me up. I'm so mad. I can't go and tell any of my friends that I had two tickets to the Prince concert, and not only do I don't get invited to the after party, I lost my girl. So this is why my mom says like, how this started as such a good night. How can it be that Karina went to the Prince party, and you didn't go? I don't know if I'm more upset with her. Or you. I'm worried about you, Marcus.
She didn't blame Prince for any of it.
She didn't blame Prince, but she's like, okay. You can't hold... My mom
it's
asked
Prince's
me,
fault. Man.
You can't hold on to your girl? And this was like, stop talking. This was the worst... He went started with the best night and ended up being the worst night.
Yeah, I hear you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact... You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Okay, so tell me about the successful Prince.
No, I just met Prince in New York. It was a listening party. It wasn't that cool.
This is way later.
Way later, because I just got nervous and said, hi.
Yeah. But what else are you going to do, right? It's Prince.
It's
not like you would bring up, you know, there was a time when I...
No, it was not the time for that.
But do you remember any gigs at Neff? Do you remember any memorable like gigs at Neff that you remember?
I remember coming here with my sister, and it's too bad she's not here, Linda. Because she was always the
guy. Your older sister.
Yeah, I had two older sisters, Anna and Linda. And Linda was always in tune with whatever was cool was going on. I wasn't that cool. I could go with her And then the rule was don't embarrass me, which I couldn't control.
Because no.
It could happen.
I think you were just embarrassing, just, you know, you were her younger brother. Yeah. What, you know.
But she gave me sort of the keys to the city. And she knew so many cool things. Like, she know there was a gay club here called Bacchus back in the day, which it was just another key to Gothenburg that, you know, that Patley couldn't provide to you, right? Yeah. It just couldn't. Like, Patley could provide many things, but not that.
No.
Yeah. So I just remember coming with my sister here, hanging out, trying to talk to her friends, and they were like, psst, what are you doing? Not really, like, not, you know, not being that successful at it, but just still wanting to come back for more and just figuring out how to navigate and build confidence. And, you know, there's a lot of people here that I grew up with that are here. And I had some, you know, Thomas helped me a lot. And this kid, Papo, that was here the other day. And he helped me navigate in the city. So I have a lot of, like, older brothers that helped me sort of, like, get my legs up and figuring out how to get a girlfriend at least.
Yeah.
Which is so much about being a teenager is about, right? Yeah, boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is. Yeah. You know, this is like
love.
You
don't have a handbook on how to, you know, for love. I mean, especially not as a teenager.
No.
I remember I got a call from one of the most respected, you know, or coolest musicians in Lund, Måns Malmsteen.
Yes.
He had a band called Soul Quality Quartet. This is the same year that we met. We met, I think, in the spring 1995. Or when do you remember when you came to New York?
I did. I came on like in January. Yeah. So
yeah.
Probably,
so
right?
I think spring 95.
Yeah,
we
makes
met.
Sense.
Anyway, this is like summer 1995, summer or early fall, and he had this really cool band called Soul Quality Quartet, and they performed at Nefertiti at least once a month. Like nice. Super cool band.
Yeah.
They played, you know, acid jazz. That was a very cool genre of music back then. That definitely is not cool anymore, and funk and soul and stuff like that. And he asked me, he's like, do you want to come with us? We're going to Neff to perform. We need rap on two songs.
Yeah.
I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm with you. You know, so first time I performed at Neff, 1995.
Amazing.
Yeah, and it just puts it in perspective what this stage, this room has, you know, meant to me. Of course, back in 1995, going to another city to perform, I performed a lot in Lund, where I came from.
And did you speak Swedish or English?
And I performed a lot in
English.
Oh, English. No, I would never dream of rapping in Swedish.
Wow.
I wouldn't even speak Swedish on stage because it wasn't cool. You know, it just wasn't. I would perform in Lund, and it was just my friends that were there that I went to school with, and we're speaking Swedish all the time, and I'd be speaking English between songs.
That's
too.
Cool.
You know,
yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, you know, I think I even forced some of my friends to like we'd speak English on like Pogastana, like
nice.
On the recess,
yeah,
you know, because that was
identity.
That's how that was hip hop was in English.
Yeah,
you know, I thought about it when you said like working at Belle Avenue. You're in Sweden, but cooking French food. It's like just, it's never going to be as good as the real thing.
No.
Almost the same thing as being a rapper in the early 90s in Sweden, because what you're trying to do is African-American music, but in Sweden. It's just not going to be as good as
but
the
you,
real
you
thing. Unless
about,
you're Lila Kim.
You asked me about who brought me here and memories I have. I actually have a lot of memories coming here with Stone Funkers, which is a legendary Gothenburgian band.
Big up.
And, Danielle, she was a dear friend of mine, Papa D, and he was always a guy that allowed us. But we didn't know. We knew Daniel. That was our guy, until our friend Clarence stole his girlfriend, which is a true story.
Clarence is
in the
is
room
here tonight,
and I was upset because Clarence, first of all, he's much younger. I said, Clarence, do you understand? Everything we get invited to goes through Papa D. We're not welcome anywhere. He's the one who's welcome, and he invites us. Do you understand that you shut the door for all the cool parties? He's like, I don't care. So that's how was the time for me to
that's
end.
How that went. That's when you were like, I really
I gotta
leave
go,
this town.
Because my cool card was up.
Yeah.
And then it was also on the not-so-much fun side. It was, I think, I always say food saved me in so many different ways, because when you grow up in the suburb and you come to the city, just like being adopted, you have mixed identities. Mm. And navigating through these mixed identities. And I always remember being a kid, but then becoming a late teenager, being a kid is so innocent. Becoming a teenager, you got to identify and be like, what's going to happen to me? And watching my father's journey, coming from a fishing village, being a fisherman, but through education, going to university and becoming a geologist and running a company, that was his journey. That wasn't my path. And I was always nervous. How am I going to do as well as my father? And I didn't know who to speak to about that. I had a lot of anxiety and angst about that. And I saw maybe in 3 weeks' time, there was a couple of incidents where I'm like, my innocence of just being was like, I got to go. So at Park Avenue, of course, we went to Park Lane. A young girl that worked there, she was just hanging. She was a co-check girl. Wonderful.
A friend of yours.
Yeah. Wonderful girl. Co-check girl. She OD'd. She died from a Molly tablet, from ecstasy. And we
the
all
early knew, days of rave culture, in Sweden.
We knew, and here's the thing. We knew her, and we knew the guy
that who had given her the
given
drugs.
It to her. Yeah. He wasn't a bad kid. He was just a kid. Mm. And she just wanted to party at one of these places. And it scared the shit out of me.
I remember that time when you'd read in the newspaper about people dying from ecstasy.
Like someone 20 years old, just partying, being a young, incredible person, did one step, one bad thing, or one thing that was off, and died. Like that, that's like I never, like it never recovered from that. It really messed with me because one of those situations, I could have been at the party. I was never into drugs, but it wasn't. The friends I was with was still just like, she didn't deserve to die, right? And also, he wasn't a bad person. He was just a young kid like trying to hustle. So this really was torn with me. The other thing that happened, a friend of mine died he stole a car and flipped it over. And this kid was from Patle, Roger. He was a good friend of Mats, and he was from out there, and he died too. So this is happening now, back to back.
Within the space of 3 weeks or so.
Yeah. And it really is like, when you're 14, 15, 16, everything is cute, and you kind of have like 16-year-old problem. When you're 18, 19, 20, it got much more serious. And I had no idea how to navigate through that, because I knew all of those kids. And I could have been in Roger's car. I'm a bad driver, so I wouldn't have driven it. But he was a dear friend of mine. Yeah. I went to school with him. And so I was like, I got to get the fuck out of here. Mm. I got to go. Yeah. This is bad.
Yeah.
So that was one of the reasons.
I mean, but you
know, it's not a sexist story, but it's true. It's just this fear of those two things and never really recovering mentally. And mental health wasn't something you could talk to. You can have a psychiatrist or mental health was not. Just get over it. What the fuck are you complaining about? Get out.
Yeah, well, there were psychologists at school, but nobody ever talked to the psychologist at our school. Was very, very creepy. and then they had a CEO consultant that was supposed to help you kind of find out what you wanted to be in life. I remember I had one meeting with the CEO consultant, and she was really. It was really a kind of a vibe killer or like a dream killer. It was like, maybe you can go into construction or cooking, because it was about what high school I should choose.
Yeah.
And it was either the construction program or a cooking program. And back then, I have a great respect for chefs. A lot of my friends today
really
are
chefs. You're really good.
You're
chef.
One of my best friends. You're a chef. But back then, when I was in ninth grade, like the kids that went to cooking school for high school was usually like the problematic kids. So I just felt like my CEO consultant was full of shit, and I was then I never talked to that person again.
I don't really have a bad memory from the psychiatrist. I only went once, and it was how to get out of the Swedish Army, and she helped me get out of the Swedish Army.
What did you say?
I just said, like, I'm not a good fit. I'm the weakest guy. I don't know anything about guns. I don't know how to put anything together.
Yeah.
I listen to music, and I like food. I like clothes. You don't want me in the Swedish Army. This is not a good fit. Look at me. I would be horrible. And she's like, yeah, you're right. You know, you're not a good fit for the Swedish Army.
Was it only because so my parents are American, so I'd never had to do the what they called mönstringen, which was the
kind of... Oh, I did for one day with
Harvard. Yeah, like everyone who was a Swedish citizen when they were 18, I mean really kids or 17 had to go and go to the army facility and be like assessed to see where in the army you would fit in. I didn't have to go because I was an American citizen. But I remember hearing my friends' stories. But was it only guys that were called?
Yeah. No, it's mandatory for boys.
So weird. It's not long ago, but when we think about it today, that's such a weird thing that it wasn't girls and boys. It was only boys.
But it's also for me.
But people would say things like, oh, I'm afraid to take a shower with other people, or I smoke weed. Or, you know, people would really act crazy and then they'd be let out.
But the smoking weed was a common one. I just knew that my father prepared me for it since I was 14. He's like, chop wood, you need it for the army. I'm like, I don't chop wood.
And so he kind of, Lennart Samuelsson, he was like, of course you got to do the army. Because he had done his army.
Yeah, you need to know how to fix the car because this is good for you when you go to the army. I'm like, I don't know how to fix a car. I'm not interested in cars. So, you know, there was always these vibes between sort of masculinity and where do I belong. And I was like, I would be the worst. And I still can guarantee you it's a good thing for the Swedish Army that I never
I
became a Swedish soldier.
I agree.
That's why Sweden never went to war.
Maybe. Yeah.
Anyhow, Jason, I want to talk about something that was big. Creativity don't stop stuff. We always have hurdles, different ways. I wrote a book called The Rise, but you wrote an incredible album. Actually, it's my favorite album. So your seventh album?
It's my tenth.
Tenth album.
Yeah.
And Du Gamla...
Depends on how you count.
Yeah. Du Gamla, Du Nya.
Yeah.
What is that even... Talk to me about the process of the album. First of all, I know this is in Sweden, but you guys... That album is incredible and it deserves applause.
Tack. Yes. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. Yes.
Well, you know.
Tell us about the process.
So it came out August 20th. So it's the last album that I did. I don't think if it wasn't for the pandemic, I don't think I would have recorded an album, to be honest with you. I mean, basically, I had nothing else to do. And my refuge, when I came back from New York on March 16th, when I landed in Stockholm, you know, I have a young daughter, so obviously I need to take her to take her and leave her at daycare around 8:30. Then I pick her up around 3:30 back then because she was smaller. It was buying the groceries, thinking about what to cook, and then... It was writing one rap verse every day.
Every day you wrote a verse?
One traditional rap verse is 16 bars. That's 16 lines. So as long as I write a 16 every day, and then I cook food, take my daughter to school, pick her up from school, that's what I have to do in a day. And that was just to survive mentally. Wow. So after 16 days of writing one verse a day, I called my friend Jens and was like, Jens, I think I need to go into the studio to record some of this stuff. And he's like, come, you know. I'm like, you're not scared of anything virus related. He's like, it's fine, come.
Good.
And that's how we, you know, started recording the album. But Du Gamla Du Nya to me is like the world's, it's like the simplest wordplay around. You know, it's the first half line of the Swedish national anthem. Du gamla, du fria. You old, you free. And instead mine is you old, you new.
Mm-hmm.
and to me, it was both. One kind of fiber of it is that it was obvious, even though we were at the beginning of the pandemic. I mean, remember... May 2020, we felt like the pandemic had gone on forever and soon it will be over. And yet and still, it's almost more than a year, more than that. I mean, I don't know how we would have felt mentally if we knew, if somebody told us in March 2020, this will go on till about September, October, November. I don't know what this fall or winter is going to be like. But this 1.5 years is going to be like that. Would that have been easier? Or Was it good the way we had it, that it was like, oh, maybe soon, maybe in June you'll be able to do something, maybe in August, you know? Anyway, so one fiber was that we're definitely leaving the world as it once was. And we don't know what the world after this pandemic is going to be like. And we still don't know.
No.
We still don't know. It's becoming clearer and clearer, all the mental health issues that we have gone through, that people around us have gone through, all the economic difficulties that people are going through, the kind of remapping of just like cultural institutions in Sweden, places like Nefertiti all around this country and in the world.
Yeah.
Some have survived, some have gone under. All the mom and pop restaurants in the Bronx, in Harlem,
in Sweden,
Sweden, you don't have to go to Sweden, the Bronx. That have had to shut their doors. Will they be able to open again? So that was one of Du Gamla. It was the world before the pandemic. Du Nya, the world after. Mm-hmm. But then also, there was very simple for me because I'm the Gamla and my daughter is the Nya.
Nice,
you know.
Maxi.
So it was something about that too. It was a handing over. And then on another kind of more macro perspective was that Sweden as a country, and I've been writing songs about this for the past 20 years, is in this like identity crisis, you know, or this we're updating our software of who we are. And we talk a lot about this in the podcast. And that has to do with the picture of Swedishness. You know, and it's very obvious when you're kind of a non-normative Swede that with Swedishness, it means certain things. There's certain things like baked into that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And when you yourself feel like I don't fit into that idea, then either, and I've gone through all those stages, either you're like, well, then that's not for me. You know, that's why even though I was born here, I don't always feel like I am Swedish.
Oh, you very Swedish. You're very Swedish compared to me. Like, if we go out somewhere, he always like, Marcus, be quiet. Don't embarrass me. Don't embarrass me. That's the Swede in you.
Marcus and I did a very popular Swedish. I'm not allowed to say it, but, you know, we're among friends. But I'm not going to say the name of the show, but we did a very popular TV show yesterday. And and it's a very kind of stuffy atmosphere and very like reserved and calm atmosphere. And Marcus
it's
like,
Sweden!
Yeah, like this, you know.
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm like, Marcus, please, we need to sit down.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, I feel like I'm in school again.
Yeah,
what
no,
am I going to
no,
get
no,
thrown
no,
out?
No.
You know. So yes, I'm very Swedish, but
so I just
compared to you, but I will say that when you realize from 6-7 years of age that you don't fit into that idea of who is Swedish. Also, because people are constantly asking you, where are you from? Where are you really from? Or like, who, you know, you're exotic or you're so colorful or you're so like, and also I have a name that
I've
was impossible to pronounce, you know.
Yeah.
Well, at least if you call people on the phone and you say, hey, det är Marcus Samuelsson. Jag skulle vilja komma in för en arbetsintervju. You sound like a Gotham, a young boy from Gothenburg.
Listen,
blah, blah, blah.
It's just moving.
When,
it's a situation.
But when I call up and say, I wouldn't even say my last name, Jason Diakite.
Yeah.
They're like, whoa, hey.
Jason
you know, yeah,
Jason
it's like, that don't even.
Well,
like,
well Jason, I don't know if it's easier or harder because
let
when
me just,
I. When,
let me just finish and say that. So this idea of what Swedishness is and who is included in that, you know, needs to be updated. It is being updated by all of us, you know, in this country. So we have to rewrite the idea of that. We have to rebuild the idea and reimagine the idea of that. And that's also the old and the new. Because to me, it's not even, it doesn't matter how many right-wing extremist politicians are in parliament, you can't stop the natural evolution of things. And that is that we are already here. You know, we have people who are in Sweden, who are Swedish, who look like you and you and you and you and you. And we're all here,
yes,
you know?
Yes.
And it's simple mathematics is that they'd have to do something really, really evil to get rid of us. And that they're not going to do. So there's no getting rid of us. So that means the idea needs to be, you know, we have to widen the scope of what is Swedish. And that's what's in the album, too.
Yes. I love the album, and I'm very biased, but I love the process of what I look at the album. For me, it's also about dreaming, right? Because you went back to the core. And I think I want everyone to think about that. When all the doors shut, you can still go back to your core, whether it's your hobby or what you love to do. Jason went back to his core. He went back to spitting 16 bars every day, putting them out on Instagram. Whether you have 2 followers or 2,000 followers or 200,000 followers, it doesn't matter. You can go back to your core. And out of that comes an evolved process, which obviously your bars are somewhat edited, but your album is really curated, right? And there's an honesty in the album that, you know, as creatives, you put in your lyrics and your music, it's a mirror. You're holding up the mirror and you're sharing it with an audience. As a chef, I do the same thing. The process of making a dish, it's like, I remember in the 90s when I didn't even bring Ethiopian ingredients into the food because I didn't know how. And then I went to Ethiopia and then it was a must. I couldn't edit them out. And now this balance between Swedish food, black identity, Ethiopia, Harlem, it's all within the food. And then you take another layer of sustainability and world responsibilities and all of these things that now goes into the food. You know, when you write a song like Palmer, you're really holding up your own mirror, and you have a documented record for your daughter, which is incredible, right? And that's why I think it's so beautiful about the album, is that this is a documented thing. And, you know, for me, I left Sweden. I had a daughter really, really early when I was a kid myself. Mm. It scared the shit out of me. I tried to, like, escape that journey. But, of course, you can't escape it. And I grew up learning how to, almost backwards in a way, like, grew up learning how to love, deal, not fear it, take care, and love and get love back. Mm. That was a long-ass process. Mm. If I would have been a musician, maybe I would have written about it. Mm.
In food, but you cooked about it.
I cooked about it.
Yeah.
And it kept me disciplined. Mm. Mm. And
it gives you something to live for. That was your North Star, you know.
It was, and it wasn't me. It was like, again, it was through my mom, through my sisters, other people that were very close to me, guiding me through that process. Mm. And learning how...
And talk about your grandma, Helga.
Yes.
Because, I mean, Helga is really... She is someone... That's the woman who taught you how to cook. As I recall hearing you talk about several times, and when you go up to the Red Rooster in Harlem, the menu changes constantly. It's got constant evolution. And what I love about you, Marcus, is how you tell a story of who you are and what you cook. You go up to Harlem... for a while on the menu, you could get, as an appetizer, you could get injera with gravad lax and what the heck? It was like...
Berber and mustard.
Exactly.
Coffee mustard.
Exactly. So you had like Ethiopia, Sweden served in Harlem, you know, in such a beautiful way of mixing up all or using all of your identities to tell that story. But Helga's meatballs are... I think they've always been on the menu since you opened.
Oh, we took them off for one day, and it didn't work.
Why,
the whole restaurant crashed.
Why?
The computer crashed.
Yeah.
The juju.
You know the ancestors here.
I know. It was very, very bad.
So tell us about Helga and how she, you know, what she means to you.
My grandmother Helga, I think it's also, it links me to two things, right? First of all, my life, when you're adopted, there's luck, there's randomness, all those things involved. I was born in a hut that is like this, basically the size of that table. And I would go back there before the pandemic every year. It gives me both fear, chills, and confidence to go back to that hut, right? My sister and I and my mom, we had tuberculosis. And then eventually my mom walked us to a Swedish hospital in Ethiopia.
Yeah, but wait, you say walked you to, but that was a very far walk.
Far walk. She had to think about what food to feed us. We ate at night. All of these things I've learned afterwards.
How far was the walk?
It was, I mean, now it's a 2-hour drive because there's roads there.
It's a 2-hour drive. Yeah, so it's a 3-4 day walk.
Yeah, exactly.
And she walked with 2 kids.
With 2 kids. And that image in my head is.
And she had tuberculosis at the time.
Exactly. And eventually the walk killed her, right? So when we got to the hospital, she died. My sister and I survived. Here's where luck and the goodness of others comes in. And I bring that back to Helga because I'm here because so many people, I had the fortune of luck, I had the fortune of someone saying, hey, what's going to happen to those kids? And empathy. And when you think about getting out of tough times like this, what do we need? We need luck, we need empathy, and we need love, right? So me and my sister were at the hospital. They cured the tuberculosis. A nurse there said, what's going to happen to these kids? We can't just throw them out on the streets. They're like, they're cured. They need to go wherever they came from. She takes us in, which is not even legal. She just takes us, right? Then she connects us back with the Swedish adoption agency. And here's again what random and luck. My parents at the time are trying to adopt one child. They get this kid from Bolivia that in the last minute, his grandmother changes his mind and says, hey, I don't know where Sweden is. If you're going to adopt my grandson, the Swedish parents have to bring him back to Bolivia once a year. My parents were like, we can't fly to Bolivia once a year and show what's going to happen. So that gets nixed. The next day, they get a call to say, hey, I know you wanted one child. We have two kids in Ethiopia. I mean, just think about the emotions, the changes, the what, like everything, right? So we get to Sweden. My father is very pragmatic. He's like, between driving home from the airport, he got the names and he got the birthdays. He's like, get the kids in the car. The girl's name, they need international name because maybe one day they'll leave. Okay, the girl's name's going to be Linda. The boy's name's going to be Marcus. Okay, done. Birthdays?
And your mom just accepted that.
Listen, no conversation.
She's like, I'm not going to...
No.
Pick your fights.
Yeah, pick your fights. Yeah. Next thing, what day is it today? May 6th. That's your sister. Which one is the oldest? The girl? Okay, that's today. That's your birthday. Marcus' birthday, 6 months later. Check. Two things out of them. So those are my birthdays, right? That tells you a lot. About
wow.
So someone says,
wow.
Well, oh, yeah. You're Scorpio. You're such a Scorpio. I'm like, sure,
I
whatever.
Yeah.
And then, so then, eventually, like, you get to my
maybe
grandma.
You aren't as old as I think you are.
That's so good. Then, connected back to my grandmother, Helga. So my grandmother, she was a domestic.
That like, means she worked in rich people's...
Living,
working at rich people's
yes.
houses. Cleaning, cooking. Yeah.
So when people think...
Who's homeless girl?
Yes, domestic. Started work at 11 or 12.
Wow.
Right? So I'm connected not only to poverty in Ethiopia, but I'm also connected to poverty in Sweden. My grandfather that I loved, he was unemployed for a long time. So these stories, although when we came to Sweden, they were retired, they were middle class... But the core cultures is out of poverty. Mm. So it was something we talked about, Swedish poverty, was something that was in her cooking, which means you don't waste, which means she's like, if she would be on Helga, be on Instagram today, she would be trendy. Because yeah. She would be like, nose to tail, yeah. Foraging.
Look
at my lingonberries.
Yeah.
Look at my,
I pickled this myself.
Yeah, I pickled this myself.
I make my own cheese. Yeah.
She also would be pro-child labor, which was me and my, of course, me and my sisters, clearly child labor.
Yeah.
She'd go to her house, she always knew, like, shit, you got to work when
you're
there.
Yeah, you got to work.
It was not like just coming there, hanging out. Oh, no, there's apples to be picked, there's herring to be pickled, there's bread to be made.
Yeah.
If you're here, provide work.
Okay, so you learned the basics of Swedish cooking from Helga.
And I don't even think it's cooking. It's also a lever of class, which we don't talk a lot about. But when you travel in Sweden today, we're still a class system. Jason and I had the luxury to travel in Gothenburg today. We went out to Biskopsgården, and we went out to Angered. And we had a very dear friend of ours guide us through how does Angered look like and how does Biskopsgården look like, and we're not experts in this at all, but rather than hearing about what's going on in Sweden, we want to experience it. And the beautiful thing about Sweden is that there's this elevator that you can clearly, you can go up and down, right? But if you don't do that, exercise that, you don't meet all of Sweden. You're actually just staying in your lane, and you're reading in the news, so you're seeing on Instagram how bad it is in the suburb and how bad old people are in the suburb. We saw the best fresh fruit. We saw the most beautiful Moroccan desserts. We saw the best kebab and all the incredible food that we get from cultures all over the world that we take for granted when we're drunk and we eat shawarma at night. We just assume that this Turkish or Lebanese place will be open, is there for us. So we are all, everyone in here, are consumers and an active part in the Swedish society. And I really felt privileged to be there with you today and to just learn more. I do not have the answers, but I do know if we do not activate ourselves and go to these places, we will never solve it. We will live in a false augmented reality that will lead to even more bigger divides. Sweden, for me, which we both love, is becoming more like the United States. People are richer than ever, and people are poorer than ever.
Yeah.
And United States is trying to become more like Sweden, which is like an interesting sort of like turnaround. But I do think
it's so true, Marcus. The Sweden we grew up in the 80s, even though you may or may not be a little older than me, but had the smallest divide between rich and poor in the entire OECD. Today, 2021, we have the fastest growing divide between rich and poor in the entire OECD. We also have the biggest gap in unemployment between people who are born in the country and people who are not born in the country in the entire OECD. So inequality is growing at a very rapid rate in this country. And that's not something that really is a part of the bigger public discourse. You know, I feel a lot of times when you read about a neighborhood like Biskopsgården eller Rosengård eller Rinkeby, that they zoom in on small details. Like this certain individual did this certain crime, and that's what this individual and the entire group that individual represents needs to be punished, or it's somehow their fault that this happened, you know. And as long as Sweden and the Swedish folk opinion, like the public thinking, is looking at it that closely, like with looking at it like this, we'll never solve the challenges that we're facing.
But I also thought, like, I think, like, when hip-hop and urban culture come from abroad, we embrace it. But when it is in our neighborhood, in our backyard, we don't look at it.
True,
right?
True.
And that has to do with our identity, and those are our issues. For example, I saw something I'm going to bring back to the States. We were in Biskopsgården today, and at one of the vintage stores, like, I don't know if it was...
Statsmikronan. Yeah.
They had a stylist. I was like, how dope is that?
Yeah.
We met this incredible guy,
Jean Bosco,
that's from Rwanda.
The
hippest hippest guy you will ever meet. And they have a stylist. Of course, you go in there, you need help. You don't know what's good, or maybe you don't have that level of style. Well, they were there. But for me, it's like, that's so beautiful. That is a story that needs to be exploited and told to everybody, because that's only in Sweden will you see something like that. Mm. So rather than telling only in Sweden the bad stuff, there's also gazillions great stories.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of good news.
And I know when you going to become a Swedish politician.
Oh, I thought you were going to say stylist in, you know,
I know we can count on you for drive this narrative, because there are flowers in the suburbs as well.
There might be. Of course there are.
Yeah, and for me it's like, that's what I hone into. When you talk about these areas, I think about the food.
Mm.
I think about the amazing, you know, the pizza guy today, he has an open wood, he has an oven which he so feeds with real wood, right? That's amazing, because it means he can bake it at a certain hot, heat.
Get it really hot, yeah.
And he gets a better quality pizza. I'm like, how come no one has written about that guy?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? The pastries we saw today by the Moroccans and the Syrian, it was incredible.
Yeah.
And we found it. So it's not like they didn't show it to us. It's there.
Yeah.
And you know who knows it? All the immigrant Swedes are there, because they're the consumers and use it every day. And we... the people who don't go there other ones missing out.
Mm. No, but you said it, I remember several years ago, you said like the average middle class urban Swede has no problem going all the way to Turkey and come back to Sweden and talk about how fantastic Turkish food is, but they never go to Angered to try the Turkish food that's out there,
yes,
you know, right around the corner from where they live. Now,
should we take questions?
Yes.
Yes.
Dear
yes.
audience,
we've just
been listening to us going on and on.
Yeah.
And we could do that for a while longer, but I thought we'd bring in.
Yeah, we definitely
guys,
have to have some questions. Absolutely.
And it doesn't have to be questions. Do you have any thoughts? I got a
absolutely.
Microphone. I'll run up to you guys wherever you are. Do you have something to add? Thoughts, questions?
And since I'm slightly older, my legs are tired, I'm going to
sit
back
no, I got
and just
it.
Keep
I got
back
it.
Like
I'll,
grandpa.
I'll take this one, big bro.
Nice. So we have to start. We can start with, I think we have some people over here that at least we know they don't have any choices but to ask questions. So why don't you bring the mic over to the bar to the cool kids? And I know in Sweden it's like everyone says, well, I don't want to ask a question, but later on you want to ask a question. So let's ask.
This guy seems prepared. What's
your
Johan
name? Is prepared. Johan is prepared.
Johan.
I grew up with him, so he knows.
I've been fortunate enough to be a Marcus friend since I was kind of young.
Yes.
I've always admired your tenacity, your
thank
fire
you.
In the eyes, and what you accomplished. We're forever proud of you, even your friends.
Thank you.
But the way you dress, man.
And
even you. You guys are so cool. Are you ever going to start a clothing line? And when is your art coming out? Except for the food, because it's the same stuff.
So thank you, Johan.
Some of us can't wait for it.
That was clearly planted, right?
Thank you, Johan.
So coming up, Johan and I, we did what all Swedes did, and I had to do it this weekend with my friend Clarence. I explained to people, as a kid, you go to the avenue, you just walk up and down. You know you're not going to get into any of those places. But
this is the main street of Gothenburg.
Yeah, right? So you walk up and down, and you meet Johan and his friends, and they were always like into something cooler and different. Right? So this was like, you know, they had like the coolest brands, or they knew about hip-hop before you, or they knew about art or graffiti. And it was just a way of meeting other kids to explain to people, like, so what did you guys do? We just walked up and down. But once you've done that in the cold a couple of times, what did you do? We just walked up and down. And it's really weird for a person that doesn't come from Gothenburg, but it's such a big part
of that. We did it in Lund, too, you know. It wasn't such a long walk, you know. Real short walk.
Yeah. No, but so Johan and I have always, and he has one of the best.
So, but he asked you about your art and your clothes. So
Johan
talk about it.
Johan has an incredible art gallery that he, if you want to follow Johan on Instagram, it's JVB. J_Valor.
Forever.
Which is an incredible art gallery, both online and in presence. And Johan was also an early member of Aqua Limone brand. Got that to Gothenburg, which
hot in the 80s.
Yes.
Hot in the 80s. I remember it, man.
See?
Too expensive for me. But
well,
but what about your art, Marcus? A lot of people don't know that you paint a lot. Well, you used to paint a lot.
I still paint a lot. I mean, it's a part of the process of what I do before I build a restaurant.
You're the only person I know who paints with spices.
Yes. I do.
Yeah.
And coffee and wine and you know, there's a million people who does one thing one way. It's just why not be one of one? You know, it's a much better opportunity in that.
Do we have any more questions?
Yes.
Yes, over there.
Nice.
All right. I feel like a Lebanese wedding singer. They always walk around and they always walk around in the room and sing to people, but I'm not singing.
Okay, where is that? Okay, first of all, I need to apologize to my sister because she's mad at me now for speaking in public again.
Good.
Yeah, I know.
She's jealous.
And also, shout out to you, Marcus, because when I grew up, like a little nerd food kid, I loved like seeing you and your cooking. It was so inspiring. You don't even know. I was in Angered just
nice.
Watching your cooking. It was so inspiring.
Thank you.
Also, En droppe midnatt.
Yes, talk about it. Yes.
I study anthropology.
Wow.
Still, no, it's not wow. Still, well, we sort of have a history of racism that we're trying to deal with.
Nice.
But still, I can't find any literature. I haven't found anything that builds a bridge between the minorities and us, the white ones. You know what I mean? Nobody wants me at dinner parties because I'm like, but racism. But I'm white, so I should like shut up and stop these conversations. Wow. But I also grew up in Angered, so I know that it's not fair. That book is the only thing that you can give, like, my mom, who's, how old is she, 50, 55, and she gets it. She gets why we need to talk about it. Do you have? It's such a bridge, and I can't find it in any other literature. Like, the job you did, I have mixed children. This book is like a Bible for us.
Wow.
And it's going to continue to be. I'm so thankful. I'm trying to come up with a question, but
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Great.
Thank you so much.
That's why you wrote the book, Jason. Yeah, yeah. That's why you wrote the book.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And thank you for sharing.
That is so
and
beautiful.
Little sister, don't be embarrassed by your big sister.
And can I just have one question about what do you mean was doing video? We do cooking videos more than ever.
Yeah.
Okay, good. All right.
Anybody else?
Yes. You know, I actually think rooms like this are great bridges, and that's the whole point of this moment, our podcast, right, is to create understanding of hard issues, right? It's very, very hard to understand another side, whether that side is whether you're Christian and you don't understand a Muslim side, or whether you're black and you don't understand a white side, or vice versa. So one of the reasons why we started the podcast is to share these stories.
And also to learn.
To learn, you know, absolutely. Yeah. And we learn a lot from, I think back about all the different speakers we've had, from Al Gore talking about climate change, Wyclef talking about how he started the Fugees.
Angela Rye
talking about being a black media icon in America during an election year. Ziggy Marley, you know. But one of my favorites is actually when you, this week, talk about hip-hop in Uganda. Because that's like so mystique to me. What does it look like? What does it hear, listen to? What does it, you know, sound like? And that was really, really special. I don't think we should get the
any more questions? No, we're not going to let them go. I was just sitting down for a second.
I mean, Jason has written so many songs. You don't want to know about how he writes a song, what is it, you know, what it goes into. So between, yeah, there we go. Clarence got a question. Thank you, Clarence. It needs to be a question to Jason because...
Sorry, man. That's good. I have to walk right. No, it doesn't have to be. It could be one to Marcus.
Thank you, Jason. First of all, I just want to say I'll direct this to you, Jason. My mother's in the hospital. I thank you so much for sending her a greeting yesterday.
Yes,
she's
Lila.
She's so happy. I grew up with Tupac, and she goes, I know Timbuktu. He danced with me. So since Marcus called me out before, and I'm sitting here with my little sister and a beautiful friend Jessica, I have one question for you, Marcus. All the chefs, I see you create the best food all over the world. I've traveled with you so many years. How do you stay so slim? Do we need to count the calories? Do we need to go on all these fab diets? What do we need to do?
Very good question, Clarence. And also, let me say that your mom can make samosas for me, and then everything is, you know. yeah.
But listen, his mother is an amazing cook. She cooked always when we had these parties, like... she cooked Indian food, and I think it was like 10 kroner to get in with the plate, or maybe it was more. Maybe it was 50 kroner to get in with a plate of food. Big shout out to Lila, as she's in the hospital. And I don't know how many countless meals I've had at your mom's house. And it's just one of the staples when I go to Gothenburg. I don't even call you up. I go straight to your mom's house. Actually, even now, this time when I was here, I walked straight to your mom's house, and I was like, called you, and she's like, she's not there. She's at the hospital. So thank you for all those memories. But, you know, we're all about to change our dining habits. And I think the pandemic actually got us there quicker, right? Because on every level, everyone in this room, we have something to do in terms of sustainability and how to eat better. Whether that is you want to lose weight, or whether you want to gain weight, or wherever you are in that a cycle, that's on you. But you need to know as consumers that the animal protein taking has to be lowered. That doesn't mean that you don't have to eat meat or fish, but we all have to become flexitarian at some point. Maybe where vegetables or plant-based food 3 days of the week, 4 days of the week, can still have a little bit of animal protein, whether that's fish or meat. But no one needs to have a 200-gram steak at 8 o'clock and then go to bed an hour later. That's just not the right way to eat. And as Swedes, when we always take pride in being ahead of trends and being super healthy, we can do better. This is still the country with super healthy people, but yet fast food culture is growing the fastest in Scandinavia is here, right?
But that's also where you have a big impact as a chef, because sure. you can show people the way.
Absolutely.
In that. Like, and inspire people that Absolutely. You can cook with other things. But do you have things that are no-no? I mean, like trans fats, for example. If you eat trans fats, it's not healthy for your body. Like, how are you with... Do you stay away from certain things? Are you... I mean...
Yeah, many things. I mean, I don't drink a lot of sodas, for example. I rarely eat, like, you know, maybe I went to McDonald's, like, in 1992 is the last time.
Well, how was it?
I have no idea.
Their fries are good.
Yeah.
Speaking of trans fats.
Yeah. But I mean, it's like you're thinking about if I'm going to go to a fast food place, I actually want to go to a place where I know they cook the food, right? So we a bit, and I get it. Everybody lives fast and everybody different lifestyles. But I do think that thinking about where does the food come from? Is it in the right season, right? There's no reason to buy strawberries in January. It's just not. Don't do it, right?
Yeah.
And is it in the right season? And portion size, if we all think about that, then the whole cycle. And also, which is very hard for Swedes, but a lot, majority of the world does this, eating based on a spiritual compass.
Okay.
And
so what does that mean?
Well,
or
I mean,
what does that mean to you?
If you think about what we can learn, rather than what we don't like about culture that is not like ours, think about what we can learn from culture that is not. As an Ethiopian, there's 200 fasting days in a year, whether you're Muslim or Orthodox Christian. That means
that. Wait a minute. 200 fasting days in a year?
Yeah, but that does not mean you're not eating, right?
Okay.
That means that you maybe
take
out
butter. You're eating different stuff, yeah.
You take out butter on Wednesdays. You might not eat meat on Fridays, but you're still eating delicious food, right? If you're Jewish, there's certain things you don't eat. You want to eat kosher. You want to eat very different food on Friday, and then you celebrate on Saturday. If you're Muslim, halal, right? So we can learn from world cultures.
And Ramadan, of course.
And Ramadan, all need to fast. Mm. Everyone needs to fast. Mm. And it does more than just like, oh, I'm going to lose weight. No, that's not the point. It comes down with discipline and focus. Mm. You don't have to fast 30 days. But maybe twice a month.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So there's so much we can learn. And what's amazing is Swedes, when it comes as an app or a computer system or an Apple product, we're in the fastest in the world to apply it.
We're early adapters when it comes to that kind of thing.
When it comes to something that has to do with our health, if it's packaged from an American culture, we're early adapters.
Yeah.
But when something comes from another side of the world, it's like, ooh, I don't know. I'm not sure. Mm. I'm not going to do it. Mm. So that's implicit and biased racism. Doesn't mean you're racist as a person. Mm. It just means the doubts when something is packaged from elsewhere, we're just not as open to it. And I think there's an opportunity there to do that. So,
ladies and gentlemen, if you... don't have any more questions, and we are open if you have more questions. See?
Yes.
Just give them enough time.
I got really nervous. My heart started racing. But first of all, I just want to say thank you.
Thank you. You're
both amazing. And especially, I've been a fan of you since I was like 9.
You love it. Yes. Yes. Yes.
My big brother, his mother is from Nigeria, and you've been like the linkage between his like relationship to Sweden and Nigeria, and your music has been the first linkage to us because we have such a big age differences between us. But that's not what I wanted to say. except that I'm a huge fan. But I wanted to ask, I read your book, Du har rätt, and you talked earlier about, in your podcast, about talking about racism with kids. And I was wondering, how has your perspective of politics and activism changed when you got kids in your life? Has it inspired you or changed you, and somehow, and how?
That's a really, really deep question. Yeah. And first of all, and thank you for asking it. Yeah, and thank you for listening all those years. Well, Marcus, you want to start?
Sure, Marcus's son
is 5 years old.
So
and lives in Harlem. Was born and grew up in Harlem.
Absolutely.
My daughter is 3 and a half, born and grew up in Södermalm, two very different places, you know.
Well, I think that with one thing, just that I want every, and it's such a good idea to have events like this in many ways, because it opens up conversation. End of the day, everybody cares about their family and love, and we want to learn from each other. How do you go through that? What can I learn from you? So, for example, anything that every black kid and every black parent here knows about, whether they live in Sweden or whether they live in America, they know from day one, what day will I have the talk with my child about racism? And when you say the talk to his Swedish parent, it might be the sex talk, right? So right there, we both want to protect and give our kids the most information. But a simple thing as the talk means different things. You can go to the same school, you can have the same type of job, same type of structure, but the talk means something different. And I've been thinking a lot about when I'm going to... Zion, we live in front of a park. The coolest people in the world are police officers. Zion thinks they're so cool, their cars are blinking, they wear uniform, they talk to him every day, and he's five, and I would think to myself, remember him when he's 15. Remember this face when he's 15. And that idea that you know that you can't protect your child, not from the criminal, but from the police. That idea, just sink, let it sink for a second and think about it, how awful that is. And as a parent, you feel helpless. So the talk means different things. So I think things like that's just like this most simplified way, I think, that everyone can relate to it. And as a black person, you try every day not to be paranoid about these things. You're very cautious about bringing up racism. It's actually the last word you want to bring up in the room.
Absolutely.
Because you want to have an everyday conversation. We want to disagree about opinions and not call the other person a racist. Like, this is the last, it's not the first thought, it's the last thought. So that's why this, even in the way you ask me this, I just want the talk, and the, not just for black parents to understand what that is, for white parents to understand that this is serious business. And I'm going to give you the simplest thing. My first day of school, very first day, we all kids growing up in the same areas, my very first day of school, I sat next to my friend Mats. He's my best friend. We grew up together. We've done so many different stupid things together, but so many different fun things. Very first day, the parent said, and the teacher said, Marcus, you should sit up front. And I'm like, I'm sitting here with Mats. And then I'm 7 years old. I have to take my books. And I was super excited about starting school. I'm not even seven. And I have to kind of like walk all the way up, and I sat up front. And I sat with somebody else that I didn't know. It wasn't a big deal, right? But mentally, and that was every class. Every class, we're as kids, we're super excited, we're running to the class, and then every teacher tells you, Marcus, you should sit up front. And somebody asked me, I remember this, how come they know you?
They,
and I was like,
they
I don't know how they
you,
know
man.
Me. And then, you know, so these are like mental scars, right? Like, and it's really like, you think through this, and you don't even know how to tell your parents because you're embarrassed. So it has, we have really deep tissue things that are and within us.
And I'll add in then, for me, being a parent living in Södermalm in Sweden is, in a sense, the exact opposite, right? Because Södermalm today is extremely homogenic.
it's, you know, the apartments are very expensive. There are almost no rental apartments left. There are some, but very few. The diversity among the people that lives there is it's super homogenous. I have to actively make sure that my daughter, and my daughter's mom is a white Swedish woman from Gothenburg. So she's very fair-skinned, for all intents and purposes, white passing, and most likely will be even when she grows up. So for me, it's been this very, like, I have to make sure she spends a lot of time with my father, you know, and with, of course, with my mother too, but just that she has those bridges back to where she comes from, you know. She's still a person that comes from the diaspora, but also that she has friends and playmates that look different, you know, look different, think different, and parents and adults. So I have to, like, I have to actively expose her to diversity, because diversity is not a given in the neighborhood she's growing up in. So to the point that I know that we can't live there for a very long time, because it's too, it's not comfortable for me, but I also don't want her only having that experience. It's not going to prepare her for what the world really looks like.
But I do think identification is really important, and even fashion and things like this in culture, because think about exactly how quickly and how good and how specific, if you learn from, you know, LGBTQ community, right? Because everyone has a journey, and it's about coming up to a norm and acceptance. Everyone knows the rainbow colors and associated with the movement. This inequality about black experience through all the work have never been associated with the color in terms of, like, unification, right? Now it's to the point where companies comes in and said, oh, in May we're doing this because this is the way to brand ourselves, right? Which you can have another whole conversation about whether that's good or not. But I do think there's lessons from movements, from civil rights movements, from LGBTQ experience movement that we can all learn from, because, and eventually there's going to come one generation, maybe a generation from now or generation from two from now, is going to say, like, what were they doing? They're wasting this time and energy and money on hate
and arguing about this stuff. Yeah.
That somebody, two boys liked each other and white people or black people didn't like. This is a waste of time.
Yeah.
Where we can actually work on the real issues, which we have, which is the environment,
the climate,
which is climate, which is love and understanding.
True.
What are you arguing? I mean, for me, it all comes back to how can guys be better than IFK?
Ladies and gentlemen, before we end, I want to really send a thank you to Erin, because, you know, we're an independent podcast,
and
they're supporting us. That support is very well received. They're also a company founded in my hometown, Lund, which means a lot.
Nice.
You know, I support anything from Lund, and plus, you know, I always have my headphones in listening to music, and these headphones are great. So thank you, Erin. Marcus, I'm so fucking happy to sit down with you in Gothenburg, your hometown.
I want to say thank you to you, Jason, for keeping inspiring us. I want everyone, when you go by train, bike, car, however you get home, support your dreams. Don't kill your dreams. Mm. You're listening to two people that always nurtured and was scared about the dreams and cared about our dreams, and we had each other to really talk about our dreams. So whatever those are, hold on to them. No dream is weird, no dream is wrong,
and no dream is too big.
No dream is too
big, man.
And I want you to hold on to them. The second thing I want to say, wherever I'm in the world, I always think about Gothenburg. I always think about this place.
That's true.
I think about this place.
That is true.
I think about the people that I left. I think about the dark side. What if I would have been in that car? I think about the lessons that everybody here, the aunts and uncles and the friends that guided me through, right? I had a lot of good friends that knew that, okay, when was left, when was liberal, where was right, when to sit out one. And I always thank Gothenburg for this is a place where I can come back to. Just even working with the post office, it's really a love story. Like, I didn't want even, like, it was such a heavy project, but I was like, no, this is a place where my mom, my grandmother used to get their mail to, pay the bills at. Let's do it. So the love story with Gothenburg will never change.
It's your hometown.
It's my hometown.
It's your hometown.
And just like you.
One of your many hometowns.
Well, yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a very, very special place to me. So thank you.
And shout out to Nefertiti, or big love to Nefertiti, and to the whole team working at Nefertiti, you know.
And more than anything, thank
May
you.
May it live on for 50 more years.
And thank you to everyone here coming tonight, because you show us support and you show up in different ways. And without this dialogue and opportunity to communicate what we do on this moment, it's a very special place. And thank you, Jason, for collectively we created something in the darkest time, in the most difficult time. And I hope that that's inspiration for each one of you, whatever that dream is. Hold on to it, create it, be proud. One of the words that I was always told was, don't think you are somebody. And I said, like, but I am somebody. And then someone said, but don't think you are somebody. But I'm being told every day that I am somebody.
So how are you going to become somebody?
I want to actually do this as a, you want to, when you go to a black church in Harlem, there's always a call and respond. And I think we're here with Neff.
All right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We
yeah,
should
yeah.
do a call and respond and remember emotionally. Just don't call it out. Remember emotionally that you hear rapping with Jason. Right?
But you're doing the call and response.
No, we can do it.
Okay, so what are we
doing? I'm going to say, don't think you are somebody. And you're going to say,
but I am somebody.
Yeah, all right.
Don't think you are somebody.
But I am somebody.
Well, last time.
Don't think you
are somebody.
But I am somebody.
And I can tell you, I am Casajun Segay Marcus Samuelson from Gothenburg, from G-Burg, and I'm going to try to cook my food to the hardest, and thank you for all the support and love.
Thank you for coming out. We love you. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.